Welcome back to another episode of the Year of Plenty podcast, the show to bring you closer to your food source and help you learn the skills to make every year a year of plenty. So topics we discuss on the podcast here revolve around, you know, wild food, homesteading, traditional food ways, what else? Gardening, nutrition,
hunting.
A little bit of all the good stuff.
Yeah.
The whole point of this is to really make you more resilient through food. And today we have a very fun topic, which is ice cream.
Arguably my favorite topic.
Yeah, I never thought I would be talking about ice cream like this on the podcast, like dedicate a whole episode to it.
Never.
No, I really didn't think that would be a thing.
I definitely could see it happening.
Yeah.
I was going to wear you down to where you started thinking about ice cream more often.
Why? Because you love ice cream?
Yeah. It's been my goal since meeting you.
To get me to eat ice cream?
Yeah. Addicted to ice cream.
Well, we'll get into why in just a sec. But I need to, before we get started, mention that this podcast is sponsored by Montana Block. Montana Block, we're super happy to have them as the sponsors of the Year Plenty podcast. They're currently our only sponsors, but they are a small family-owned business from Billings, Montana, and they make these really incredible, high-quality butcher blocks, cutting boards,
magnetic knife holders, and all that good stuff. And they can do some custom orders for people, too, if you have an idea that's just burning in your brain for a butcher block of some kind, reach out to them. They're very friendly guys.
Right. No, they really are. And, you know, we have three of their products now, everything from a really nice butcher block to this giant custom-made cutting board that they're now making that can fit a whole elk quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Are you hearing a little bit of echo?
No.
Okay. Just making sure. Mm-hmm. Now, if you head over to their website, mtblock.com, they have their whole selection of products over there. And with the code Year of Plenty, you can get 15% off their entire selection. So once more, Year of Plenty will get you 15% off the entire selection. And then a small part of that sale will kick back to the Year of Plenty podcast, allowing me to keep the lights on here and keep cranking out more episodes for all of you together with Lindy here. So definitely consider doing that. And then also, if you are listening to the podcast in any of the audio platforms or on X or YouTube, hit that follow button to make sure that you are, never miss another episode again, basically. And we'll be hopefully releasing one once a week is kind of the goal, or even two a week, depending on how it goes. Yeah,
ambitious.
I'm ambitious. I'm really ambitious lately.
It's spring.
It is spring.
Springtime
fever.
It's crazy
how the mood is changing as soon as the sun comes up. I love it.
It's nice getting off work and you still have a little bit of time at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, it's the best. And I'm excited for the upcoming foraging season. But today we're talking about ice cream, not foraging.
Yeah.
So one more thing, if you have a friend who really, you know, you think would get value from this podcast, share an episode with them. That's the best way to help a show grow. Mm-hmm. So do that. And then also there's a Patreon, and you can subscribe to the Patreon for as little as $2 a month. And those are just, you know, you become a patron of the podcast, small monthly donation. And again, that helps us keep the lights on and really, really helps and is super appreciated. So Lindy, I have a question for you.
Does it have to do with a dad joke?
I don't know.
Oh.
Why did the ice cream take a vacation?
Why?
Because it needed to chill out.
Wow.
Ha, 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 ha. I thought it was pretty good.
Wow.
It took me a while to find that one.
That's a good ice cream dad joke.
Thank you.
Wow. You really stayed on theme.
And yeah, I'm trying to.
Good for
And we're
you.
Actually going on a vacation in April, so I thought it was fitting. Well needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the big question today, like, why make ice cream? That is the big question.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the better question is, who doesn't like ice cream? Right?
Yeah, why not make ice cream?
Why not make it?
Yeah.
So, you know, ever since I became more conscious about the food I put into my body, I kind of stayed away from ice cream and only really had it on cheat days. And even then, it wasn't like the food I sought out on cheat days. I like to go for pastries, you know?
I do love a good pastry.
Not like pastries from like a chain, but like, something from like mm-hmm. a small hole in the wall kind of shop downtown somewhere, you know?
Oh, I know. I agree.
But with ice cream, you know, to me, it always kind of like just symbolized this like perfect junk food full of like tons of sugar, usually a bunch of additives, low quality dairy products, plus super addictive. Like when I used to eat anything that was in front of me, I could easily sit down and eat like 2 pints of Ben and Jerry's.
Absolutely. Easy.
We're gluttons like that.
Well, you got to get every different kind of flavor and then have a little bit of every flavor. Before you know it, you've had, you know, a gallon of ice cream and you feel terrible.
Yeah. Or so after I then started like this primal keto diet several years ago, ever since then, I've really tried to stay away from it. Mm-hmm. Just again, I saw it as like this junk food, you know, every once in a while, just a nice, again, ice cream from like the local shop or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, since then, I've really changed my mind recently, mostly after my podcast episode with Dr. Kiltz here in the Year of Plenty.
Did he convince you that Ben and Jerry's is in fact the premium ice cream?
Absolutely. Not.
No.
No, I, you know, after that podcast, I really realized that ice cream is innocent and that I have convicted it wrongly.
Whoa.
This entire time.
Innocent until proven guilty.
Yep. Well, not in my eyes. It was innocent. Oh, it was guilty. Always. From the beginning. So what changed? Well, I kind of looked into how to make ice cream at home and how I can actually make it like healthy. More specifically, I learned that you can make ice cream out of 3 to 5 ingredients. That's it. Mm. And you can use ingredients that are incredibly nutrient dense. And you know how much I love nutrient dense food, Lindy.
Oh, I know.
So naturally, we had to try this out ourselves and experiment a bit the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the rabbit hole we're going to get into today. So we're going to start out by talking a little bit about ice cream history,
yeah,
because I love to learn about the history of foods, and I know a lot of people listening do as well. I've gotten that feedback from people listening before. They always like when we throw some history in there. I think it helps build that story around food and helps build that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also going to explain how to make nutrient-dense ice cream and like some of the ingredients around it and why they're nutrient-dense. And then we're going to end on talking about what we've discovered in terms of using an ice cream maker versus not using an ice cream maker.
Mm-hmm.
So, ice cream history. I know Lindy's done a good amount of research on that, but I did as well, and I'll just kick it off. There was a really good article from the British Museum, so britishmuseum.org, by a food historian called Tasha Marks, and it's called Ice Cream, the Inside Scoop. And according to Tasha Marks, you couldn't really have ice cream until they figured out how to keep ice throughout the seasons, right? Because you need ice to make ice cream. You need cold.
Whoa, a revelation.
Yeah. And surprisingly, this all started not in the northern climates, but in Persia, ancient Persia.
Mm.
Now, there were some, you know, if you look online, there are some legends about it starting in China during one of the dynasties there, and I found some conflicting info on that. But in Persia, it really started when they figured out how to keep ice during those, you know, months where it wasn't cold. Although I don't think it ever got cold down in the Middle East, you know, like that. So they just needed to figure out a way how to keep ice. Oh, they do have mountains and stuff down there too, so I'm sure they have snow. But what they figured out to do is build these ice houses, they called them. And that started like 2000 BC is from what Tasha says in her article here is kind of the first historical record.
Mm-hmm.
And these ice houses were basically buildings with very thick walls, and they would have a small door with a tiny entrance. And then when you got in, they would have a room underground, like going underground, that was kind of shaped, how do I explain this? Not really like an ice cream. So not like a triangle, I meant to say. I was thinking about a cone. So she says in her article that beyond the thick walls and the tiny entrance of the building was a funnel-shaped room. Funnel, that's what I was looking for. Dug far down below ground level. This stabilized the temperature within like a thermos flask, while allowing for melted ice to drain away and new ice to be added every year. So this was like a constant ice production house, like, an, you know, kind of cool.
So do you think they started that purely to have ice cream or
that is the food question.
Preservation?
I would think ice cream.
They were addicted to that Ben and Jerry's back then too.
I'm sure. No, it was probably a mix of, you know, because this came definitely way before the actual ice cream, how we know it today.
Yeah.
So probably food preservation. And it's very similar to what we saw in Germany. My godmother, they live in an old estate that goes back to the, I think, 1400s.
If not farther.
Yeah, and they have, yeah, they don't know if it's farther, but they have buildings that have ice cellars, deep like root cellars that were also used to store ice in. And they would get it from lakes in the winter, transport it in there and store that ice all year long down there. Very similar. I mean, that's the technology that came from ancient Persia. And I guess it didn't really come to Europe until the 17th century, those ice houses. So all this is to say that this is needed to make ice cream, you know, unless you're only wanting to eat ice cream in winter, which I don't think many people wanted to do.
No.
And before we had the actual ice cream, how we know it today, the Persians had what was called sherbet or sherbet in Turkey, which was like a semi-frozen icy drink. So basically a slushy, like a slurry.
Yeah.
And there's the first...
Straight out of the machines at the gas station, yeah, you know?
7-Eleven back then in Persia, yeah, you know?
Exactly.
The first mention of this sherbet icy drink was in, again, in ancient Persia, and in a book that I'm going to slaughter this name, but I'm going to blend it in. But it's Zakirai Kwaratzmashai. I have no idea.
I think that was dead on.
I don't want to be disrespectful, but it looks... Oh, I don't think it was dead on. Looks like just like someone put a bunch of random letters together.
Yeah.
And then that word sherbet or sherbet entered the English language as sorbet, which is now more of like an ice dessert or like palate cleanser.
Yep.
Right. So, yeah. But from there, it kind of moved to Europe. And like, when did that move to Europe? Like,
yeah. So right around the 1600s, the first recorded recipe of ice cream is actually from, let me see. I have her name here.
Anne. I think it was Anne from what
Anne
I was reading.
Anne Fanshawe. Yeah, I had it highlighted and I wasn't looking at it, which was in the 1670s. And she's a pretty interesting lady. I don't know if anyone really knows anything about her. She came from a royal family and ended up in extreme poverty after a few years. But she kept a really good receipt book, and not a recipe book, but a receipt book. So basically women back in the day would keep track of everything in their family history. So all of their financials, all of their medicinal practices, their recipes, everything in one book. And in that book, she had different recipes for ice cream, as well as what might be one of the first written hot chocolate recipes. Which,
really?
Big fan of hot chocolate. So that's super fun.
What did it say? Take water, boil, add bars of chocolate.
I don't know. She had a picture of a hot chocolate drawn. That's as far as I went into that.
That's cool.
That's not what I was reading about. But yeah, she's a very interesting lady. Says that she had at least 15 living children.
Jesus.
She died in her 55 years old.
Whoa.
So... with lady multiple miscarriages, and yeah, it sounds like she was almost constantly pregnant from the time she got married, which is just bizarre. So it makes sense why she would really like ice cream. And hot chocolate.
Right.
You know? And then kind of after that, it started getting a little more commercialized in the 18th century. They started having printed copied books for recipes. So multiple different people were starting to develop their own recipes for ice cream.
Let me guess, the Italians were one of them.
Oh, I'm sure they were.
Or they were, from what I was reading.
Yeah, definitely.
And the French.
Definitely, yeah. They didn't have any of the commercial flavors that we have now. They relied more on natural flavors.
They weren't living.
I know.
No salted caramel?
No. Yeah, none. Well, maybe they figured that out at some point, but yeah. I think it was
that's
way
not
after.
That's not a nutrient dense addition to the ice cream anyway.
No, definitely not. They did flavors like rosemary, parmesan, and cucumber were really, really popular at that time.
Yeah, I read that too.
Yeah, the parmesan, a couple different people, I watched their videos on how they made the historic ice cream, and that one sounded pretty interesting to try. So I think that's the next one that we'll make.
Parmesan ice cream. Uh-huh. I'm so down for it.
Yeah, you just take like...
The Italian in me is just singing right now.
Yeah. It's only about 2 ounces of ice of Parmesan in the ice cream. So it's not overwhelmingly cheesy, but it has that little note of something different, which I think would be very interesting because, you know, it's just not a flavor that we have anymore.
Right, right.
And the really fun part is that, like, if they made a cucumber ice cream, they would make a metal mold of a cucumber.
Yeah.
And pour the ice cream into that cucumber mold and freeze it that way.
Oh.
So when their dinner guests were over, they would serve them a cucumber ice cream.
That is awesome. Yeah. I did see also, like, that they would have all these molds, yeah, like candles. So yeah, they would literally put ice cream in these candle molds, put an actual like wick in it, and it would be served as a candle that's burning.
I didn't even see that. That's really cool.
I have pictures of it all blended in.
That's a really fast way to melt your ice cream,
actually,
though.
I got it pulled up. I will that's pull crazy. It up quick so people can see it.
Yeah.
There you go. Look at that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
We need to up our ice cream game. I know. That's kind of what I'm hearing.
We need to find some old like collection of these ice cream molds. Yeah,
that'd definitely be cool. That would be really cool. But there were three kind of types of ice cream at this point in time. So it would have been cream ice, which is your normal, you know, cream that's just iced up. And then water ice, so the sorbet.
Well, it's called iced cream.
Uh-huh, wow. And then the sorbetto, which usually involves some sort of alcohol to keep it from crystallizing over. So you take, you know, a little shot or two of vodka or whatever you want to use in your ice cream so that when you freeze it, you don't get those ice crystals.
Yep, and remember that because later that'll be important too
when
we talk about something else.
Yeah, and then the Victorian period ices became more available to the normal population because before it was just for the wealthy.
Right, the elite.
Yep, the elite.
Sugar too, I mean, a lot of that.
Yeah.
Anything sweet.
Yeah, they were the people that could afford the sugar. They could afford to have an ice house. Those were kind of a status of wealth at that point in time. Yep. Versus more towards the Victorian period, it started being more commercialized. You know, the North Americas were producing large amounts of ice, and they were being kept in ice houses all over Britain. And then
Italy, they were shipping ice from North America to Britain?
Yeah, and storing it there.
Jeez. So I wonder how that worked under ships.
Yeah, it was become a very big commercialized business at that point.
That's cool.
Which is pretty crazy. And then Italy actually started the first street ices, which as far as I could tell is kind of like the beginning of street vendors in general, which is really interesting to me. Because now it's like you walk down any street and there's at least 15 to 20 different street vendors, depending on where you are selling
all of their
goods.
But that had to be earlier than ice cream. I mean, what about medieval times? Hot pie, you know, from Game of Thrones.
I think they did, but I don't think it was in the cart form. Think of an ice cream man pulling his cart. Back then they were on a unicycle or a stationary little stand, you know, instead of having a big ice cream shop.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is kind of when they started the mobile ice cream man.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I think is really cool. Which led to the Hokey Pokey, which was usually some sort of a brightly dyed ice cream. So visually very pleasing. Before this period, they would use natural fruit dyes or vegetable dyes. So, you know, you use beets to get a red and...
Right, right. Natural colors.
Yep, natural colors. And they started to introduce the Victorian green or Scheele's green.
Ooh, which, that sounds so good.
Yeah, isn't that super tasty? We should use it in our next one.
Should we actually?
No.
Why not?
So Scheele's green was the fashion craze of the Victorian era. So women had it all over their clothing, all of the wallpaper, paints. curtains, anything you can think of that would be seen as a sign of wealth was Scheele's Green. The problem with Scheele's Green, it was loaded with arsenic.
Oh,
completely
wow.
Loaded.
Really?
So women would sometimes wear dresses to a big party, kill three or more people.
No way.
Because they would come in contact with this dress.
They put this in the ice cream?
Yes.
When they had no idea or
yep.
what?
Well, the thing is that the large commercial businesses that were using this as clothing, as wallpaper, as food resources, they didn't have any regulations because it brought in so much money. It was only regulated on an individual level.
Hmm.
So I couldn't sell something that was made of Scheele's Green to you. But Walmart could, and they did heavily.
They did the Walmart back then.
Yes, yeah. that day's whoever their
that was before Walmart self checkout. That yeah. was before self checkout.
Definitely, but it's just crazy, and it's one of those where so Napoleon Bonaparte he allegedly died of cancer. His entire house was covered in Scheele's Green wallpaper. So there's a little bit of a conspiracy theory there that. The wallpaper is what killed him.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, they knew at that point that it wasn't good for you.
He had his personal like ice cream chalice and it looked dope. I got to find it. Maybe if I find a picture, I'll blend it into the video once we release the video here.
Was it Scheele's Green?
No, it was gold with like an actual like painting on it. And like,
wow.
Yeah, it looked really cool.
I would like one.
Yeah.
We could probably paint our own.
Your own ice cream chalice?
Yeah. Just got to find some Scheele's Green first.
I don't think you would want that one.
And right around that same time was when the penny lick started, which is envision like a little shot glass, a little glass that you would get a tiny little scoop of ice cream in. All the little street vendors would have them. The kids would go through, take the glass, lick it out, hand the glass back to the vendor.
Mm.
He might rinse it out, he might not, and he'd hand it to the next person. So you gave him a penny, you got a lick.
This is where the whole food safety stuff started.
Yeah, way before.
But was it the food or was it just the way they were dealing with it? You know, handling all that.
Yeah, very true. They just had really strong immune systems.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
But, or not.
Yeah, or not. And that actually started in New York.
The penny lick?
Yeah, the penny lick started in New York. So we're the cause of all of that over here in the U.S., you know.
Bring back
licking
the penny
out of
lick.
Jars. Yeah. And after that, you got Agnes Marshall's Book of Ices, which Agnes Marshall is a pretty fantastic human being as well. I would definitely look into her a little bit. She came up with so many different modern inventions as far as ice cream cooking, a little bit of everything goes. So definitely take some time to look into her. And then, you know, during the wars, the Great World Wars, ice cream became pretty difficult to source just as far as resources go. I did find quite a few recipes of the ice creams that they would make kind of like poverty ice creams during the World War. We'll do a video, I think, that has those recipes in it because I think that would be really interesting.
Is it nutrient dense?
Definitely not. But it was one of those where it kept the morale of the men up just enough because they got their penny lick a day, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't ice cream.
Yeah.
It wasn't very good. And in the 1930s is when the stop me and buy one ice cream carts started to pop up. So the guys driving on a unicycle with their little cart and on the back, it would say, stop me and buy one. So you'd go and stop them and buy an ice cream.
That's cool.
So old school, the true old school ice cream man.
Bring that back.
Yeah, no jingle bells, but you had to go ask him for some. And then, you know, in the 1950s is when the industrial revolution started. And
a little earlier than that.
Yeah, but right about then for ice cream is
when it took off, commercialized.
Yeah, is when we started having the Industrial Revolution of ice cream. So the actual flavor started to pop out, the manufacturing
process. That's when
Willy
Wonka's chocolate factory opened up and they really started to crank out that ice cream.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's when it really started to take off into what we know now. And, you know, the waffle cone was being developed.
I did ice read pops. That, yeah.
Yeah.
Popsicles and whatnot. Yeah. That's pretty recent. Mm-hmm. All that, the processed.
Yeah.
More processed ice creams. Mm-hmm. But so how did they actually do this back then? Like, let's go back to like the 16, 1800s. Mm-hmm. How did they actually make the ice cream?
Yeah.
Well, their device that they had to make it was actually very, very similar to what an ice cream maker looks like today. It was called a sorbettiere. Sorbettiere, I think in Italian. It was Italian, I'm pretty sure.
That's really impressive.
Thank you.
Wow. Are you Italian?
Maybe. Do I speak Italian? No. Will I one day? Yes. Anyway, so the sorbettiere, I will blend in some pictures here and share some, but this was also in the in that article I was talking about earlier from the food historian Tasha Marks. And it's basically a big wooden bucket, almost looks like what you would churn butter in back then. Mm-hmm. But the middle of the bucket, there was like a cylinder that would hold the ice cream liquid. And then on the outside, the perimeter, so between that cylinder and the wooden bucket, they would add in a bunch of salt and ice. Mm-hmm. Because once they pour their liquid in, and we'll get more into the process later, they need that cold, instant cold to harden that ice cream, freeze it, that ice cream mixture. Yep. And they mix salt and ice because when you mix salt and ice, it lowers the temperature of the ice water. So the ice melts and that water then mixed with the salt is actually colder.
Yep.
Which is super weird. And
yeah,
it's a kind of a weird concept.
Yeah, I was reading that ice done that way can actually get much colder than our average chest freezer.
The ice cream.
Today.
Yeah. No, yep. Yeah. That sorbettiere. Yeah. Thing. Yeah. It was, well, yeah, it was saying that it got, yeah, it was super, super cold and it was very effective. Mm-hmm. But you had to do it all by hand. And then you had like a spatula kind of tool to stir it around and mix it around. And I'll blend in pictures of all this so you guys can see it. But that's pretty cool. And like I said, it's very similar to how an ice cream maker works today. And we'll get into that in just a bit here. But first, let's talk about the ingredients and nutrients you would want in your nutrient-dense ice cream and what we've been looking. So first of all, I want to share just like an ingredient list of ice cream from a popular brand these days. And I'm not going to read them all, but I'm going to blend in the whole thing here. One sec. I got to pull it up here. Maybe I'll read it all. Let's just read it all just so people listening can get an idea of how much really is in there. Okay, here we go. I'm not going to name the brand, but there's definitely more than 3 to 5 ingredients. There's cream, skim milk, water, chocolate fudge, powdered sugar, sugar cornstarch, vegetable oil, and within that vegetable oil, they say peanut and or cottonseed and or palm oil. Then there's cacao processed with alkali, whey, soy lecithin, salt, natural flavors, sugar, corn syrup, peanut butter cups, coconut oil, non-fat milk, cocoa, processed with alkali, and it just kind of keeps on going.
Yep.
And then at the end it says cellulose gum, mono and diglycerides, guar gum, polysorbate 80, carrageenan, xanthan gum, and annetto for color.
Wow.
So yeah, a lot. None of this is needed. None of this is needed to make your own ice cream. You really don't need any of that.
It is needed to make people sick, though.
Yeah.
And dependent on ice cream.
Yeah. So what do you really need? Well, here are the essentials. First of all, the ice cream you make at home, at least what we like to make, is definitely calorie rich because one of the main ingredients is heavy cream. Mm-hmm. Get a good quality heavy cream, full fat heavy cream, which means 40% or so. And ideally raw, if you can get raw cream and milk or raw dairy in your state, only some states allow it in the US. But ideally, even if you can't get raw, get it from pasture-raised animals. Why? Well, here's the first nutrients come in. I've had Dr. Stefan van Vliet on the podcast, and he's done some amazing studies on meat and dairy from grass-fed cows versus grain-fed. Mm. And he does these metabolomic studies, and he has shown that the pasture-raised animals grazing on biodiverse pastures who have more nutrients, more phytonutrients specifically, in their meat and milk than animals who are grain-fed. So get a cream that's got, you know, this is coming from animals that are pasture-raised, mm-hmm. ideally on a very biodiverse pasture. Then also cream, like I mentioned, has 40% butter fat. Butter is 80%. So it's about half a butter. And in that fat is where a lot of those nutrients sit. So you're going to have a lot of those phytonutrients that I just talked about in that fat. Also, full-fat dairy products such as the heavy cream contain a lot of the fat-soluble vitamins. Well, I shouldn't say a lot. There aren't really that many in there, but there's vitamin A, a ton of vitamin A in the form of retinol, some vitamin D, some vitamin E, and vitamin K. Way more than the low-fat varieties of the dairy. And then also your body really absorbs the fat-soluble vitamins better when you consume them with fat. So it's nice having that all-in-one package there. And cream is also a good source of what?
Calcium.
That's right. Got milk. That was a pretty good marketing campaign.
This seems like a much better label to read off already.
Just cream for now.
Just cream.
We already got some nutrients.
Even if you think of like the last label we read was, you know, peanut butter cups, and then they read off what's in the peanut butter cup.
Yeah.
If you do cream and you read off what's in the cream, it's vitamin, cream. Vitamin, vitamin, vitamin.
Yeah.
Good, yeah. Good, 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 good. There's no, you know, xanthium gum hiding in your cream.
Right.
I hope.
Now, the cream, though, isn't, like I said, it's not the most nutrient part of this ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
The most important ingredient, undoubtedly, in my opinion, on the nutrient density front are eggs.
Mm-hmm.
They really are a staple in a nutrient-dense diet. And you know what they say about eating eggs, Lindy, right?
What do they say about eating eggs,
Paul? Never skip egg day. Never do it. If you have your own chickens at home, don't give them away. Okay, maybe do. But make sure you never skip egg day. And if you're sick of eating hard-boiled eggs or scrambled eggs, use them to make ice cream. But you really want raw eggs. This might turn some people off, but you want the raw egg yolks. Mm-hmm. That's where the nutrients are. Raw egg yolks are crazy. They're so good for you. There are some people who don't, you know, like the idea of raw egg yolks because, yes, you could get sick, but that's why it's really important that you get high-quality eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to blend in a picture of the eggs I like to get. They have this cornucopia, I think it's called. They have this cornucopia label on there that has 5 eggs, and that's the best eggs to get. If you have, I'll blend it in. You'll see it. And those eggs are definitely the best you can get.
I wonder if there's a way to almost, if people are afraid of consuming raw egg yolks, to turn it into a custard first. So the custard, you would cook the milk or the cream and the eggs together, very, very low, very, very slow, until they get up to a certain heat where it would kill the bacteria if there was any. And then you let it cool on the counter and put it in your ice cream maker.
I don't know. I would just skip all that. I've honestly, obviously this is everyone's own risk, but I've never had any sort of issues from eating a raw egg yolk, but I've always gotten good quality.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, just make sure you get a good source there.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you cook it, you are lowering those nutrients. Now, you could probably try it, what Lindy just said. It might work.
I'm going to go with
the raw varieties. I'm just going to keep them raw.
If it was between not consuming nutrient-dense ice cream and consuming Ben & Jerry's, I would definitely say if you feel like you need to cook your ice cream, cook it and then freeze it.
Yeah, I don't know if that would work at all.
It might. But
it's like mayo. Mayo has raw egg yolks. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think it just goes back to this whole idea that we've just been so afraid of raw milk, raw dairy, raw eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And what it really comes down to is where you get it from. Like, have you seen those videos of the guy who did like 30 days of raw chicken?
No.
Oh yeah, he's all over the internet right now.
Is he
now.
The guy that washes his chicken with soap too?
No, no. He literally just eats raw chicken and he gets a really good source. It's called 30 Days of Eating Raw Chicken Until I Get Sick.
Did he get sick?
I didn't finish it, but I don't think he got sick.
Wow.
And he always got it from it. Man, I would have gotten sick just by looking at it. Does that look gross? Yeah,
I don't know. Chicken is one of those that I just don't like the idea of raw chicken.
Yeah. Well, we digress anyway.
Yeah.
Let's keep moving because the eggs are more important than the chicken because there's way more nutrients in the eggs. Dr. Kiltz, like I mentioned earlier, he's the one who inspired me to look more into ice cream. And he's got this awesome graphic that I'm going to blend in that talks. It shows like all the different nutrients in ice cream, in the eggs. And beyond that, I found a really, really good study that I'm going to share with you guys. It's actually a scientific review. So again, looking at a bunch of different studies, it's called The Golden Egg, Nutritional Value, Bioactivities, and Emerging Benefits for Human Health, a review from 2019. And this talks, I just want to read a quick excerpt from it. This study says that the egg, and more precisely the egg yolk, is a vitamin-rich food that contains all vitamins except vitamin C.
Wow.
Eating two eggs per day covers 10 to 30% of your vitamin requirements for humans.
I'm set.
Yeah.
And I'm super set. You're
precisely the egg yolk.
Wow.
So I'll link the study so you guys can check it out more if you're interested in just learning about eggs and the benefits of eating eggs. That review, not just one study, but that review of many studies has it all.
That's really cool.
But, you know, some ice cream recipes call for egg whites. We don't do that.
No.
This is when you say, why?
Why? What? No, well, egg white? Sorry.
The egg white has avidin, which actually binds vitamin B6 and biotin, which are two really important nutrients. So you need biotin for like healthy hair, good nails.
Listen up, ladies.
Yeah. So this avidin in the egg whites, actually in the raw egg whites, actually binds that, and then your body can't use those nutrients anymore.
Interesting.
Yep. So I want to keep my hair as long as I can. I'm not going to eat those egg whites raw. So gym bros out there, don't eat your egg whites raw if you want to keep
save
your hair.
Save them for later.
Yeah.
Make them in that scramble in the morning.
Yep. Now, eggs are also important in the ice cream beyond the nutrients, just because they give a nicer, softer texture. They kind of make it so that it's really scoopable, even if it's been frozen.
Mm.
So, and that really happens at 6 eggs, egg yolks per quart, upwards of 6 egg yolks per quart of ice cream you're making, or like of cream usually, from the research I've done. Now, we've usually used up to 5 egg yolks, I think. I got to check on that. I got my recipe written down, but it's sweet. Just the eggs are perfect in there.
Yeah. And it doesn't taste eggy.
It does a little bit.
I didn't get eggy at all.
But I like that. Like, I thought it has a little bit of egg. I mean, okay, the last one I made, we had a lot of egg yolks in there, and I thought that one was a bit eggier.
Oh, really?
But I mean, it's not a bad flavor.
No.
Who doesn't like an egg yolk, like a soft boiled?
I mean, I don't really think I want scrambled egg ice cream.
No, it's not like that. It's like just that little slight, that awesome egg yolk flavor. Like, I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, I didn't get any of that at all. I just thought it was tasty.
Yeah.
But
now, we mentioned cream. You can also use milk. But you definitely want to have some cream in there. And again, if you use milk, try to get raw. I've been looking a lot more into the benefits of raw dairy, and it's kind of crazy how many healing properties it has. And it's like the best probiotic you can ever take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of sweet, and hopefully we'll have more episodes on that.
Yeah.
Now, that could be your ice cream right there. Eggs and cream.
Mm-hmm.
And many carnivore, if you're looking for carnivore ice creams, that's what they are. Mostly you're probably going to want a little bit of sweetness. So depending on what kind of diet you're on, you could add sugar. You know, I wouldn't recommend that. You could add some keto sweetener, but that's also like, you know, you could do it, maybe, maybe not. What I would recommend is just use some raw honey or maple syrup.
Yeah, you don't need a lot.
No, and that adds even more nutrients, like especially honey. I just found another really good study on it. Or I think it's another review. I keep saying study, but more, I always like to look for scientific reviews. Man, I could read this whole abstract. I might do it quick.
Maybe not the whole thing.
Yeah, but then I might be missing out on some important info for everyone.
They can definitely go back and look at it, though.
Okay, I'll just read the end. It says, according to modern scientific... Well, first, I should probably say what the review is called. It's called Honey and Health, a review of recent clinical research from 2017. And again, I will link that. But it says, according to modern scientific literature, honey may be useful and has protective effects for the treatment of various disease conditions such as diabetes, respiratory, gastrointestinal, cardiovascular, and nervous systems. Even it is useful in cancer treatment because many types of antioxidants are present in honey. In conclusion, honey could be considered as a natural therapeutic agent for various medicinal purposes. Sufficient evidence exists recommending the use of honey in the management of disease conditions. Based on these facts, the use of honey in clinical warts is highly recommended.
That is all I needed to hear.
Yep.
I love honey.
So this, if you're going to get some carbs and sugar, get it from honey. It's my preferred source. Mm-hmm. I know like Dr. Kiltz doesn't like honey really. There are some people I don't get it. I haven't seen any bad research about honey besides, you know, the fructose and some of the sugar, but I know the nutritionists are still even debating whether that is all bad. And
I think if you eat it in moderation, just like anything else.
Well, that and like honey, it's a whole food. There's so much more than just the sugar in there. Like we don't even know what all those compounds in there are synergistically doing, you know,
right?
When you consume them. And I also think like our ancestors hundreds of thousands of years ago, if they found a honeycomb, they would have crushed it.
Oh, yeah.
There's
if
no
I
way.
I find a honeycomb. Yeah. I'm going to crush that.
There's no way.
Beekeepers, beware.
Yeah. Oh, well, did you know?
That's a t-shirt right there.
Like in medieval times, I learned this in Germany, beekeepers would have, now I'm blanking the word. Crossbows.
Whoa.
Crossbows. Yes. That's the word I was looking for. They would have crossbows.
To shoot the bees?
No, to shoot bandits from, because honey was
so
valuable.
That's better than the bees.
Yeah, you don't want to be shooting the bees. You'd be missing a lot of expensive arrows. Yeah. I don't think they'd ever hit one. Okay, so that was, you know, those are kind of your base ingredients, like the ones we just talked about. Cream, eggs, sweetener, honey, maybe some milk. That's all you really need. But let's get into our recipe that we've been doing lately, just to check, just to like give you an actual recipe that you can try at home. So we use 2.5 cups of high quality heavy cream, a half cup of raw goat's milk. So we found a plug.
Yeah, super top
and
secret though.
I wanted that in there. The raw goat's milk. It was gifted to us. Mm-hmm. I want the raw goat milk in there. Just for more of those healing properties and probiotics, even though, you know, if you freeze it, I don't know how many of those probiotics survive, but I don't know. I just feel like that raw milk, raw dairy is going to add a whole layer of nutrient density in there, more life into that. Then there's 6 raw egg yolks. So yes, we didn't use last time, used 6. 2 tablespoons of honey, which we upped from the last couple times we've done it, just because I wanted it a little sweeter, and I figured we're probably not going to eat this whole thing. And
no,
2 tablespoons
not.
Really isn't that much sugar. And then 1/2 teaspoon of Redmond real salt. Very important for a little salty flavor. And you have a salted honey ice cream. That's all you need. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 ingredients right there.
Yeah. And it's super tasty and very satisfying. I was a little skeptical if I would think it felt like I was, you know, being bad eating ice cream still.
Yeah.
I definitely feel bad. But in a very good way.
Yeah, I don't feel bad eating that at all.
Yeah.
So those are kind of your base ingredients. Now you could use cultured cream, which is basically fermented heavy cream, and you can make that with kefir grains.
Ooh, that would be interesting.
Yeah, we've never done that, but I've added like heavy cream to kefir to make it more thick. But it's basically like a sour cream then.
That could be really good.
It could be cool. Maybe more interesting, like those people with lactose intolerances, if you have like a slight lactose intolerance or any of that, if you can eat sour cream, you can still make ice cream.
Mm.
Now, but even though those are all the base ingredients, those 3 to 5, there is ways to make it even more nutrient dense.
Wow.
Yep. And I had some good ideas around that. So first of all, you could add organ powders from the capsules. I think,
is it going to be like liver and ice cream?
Well, think about this. I think they're pretty flavorless. I've taken the liver pills organ pills, but they've always been very like, you know, I just swallow them and I never taste them. So I don't know.
I'll try it.
I think you could throw them in there, like pop those pills open, throw it in there, the powder, and get more nutrients in there that way. And you can probably mask it with, if you add some fruit or some honey or something like that. Or the even better idea, mushroom powders.
Oh,
you
that could be
make yourself a lion's mane ice cream that's a nootropic ice cream.
That could be really interesting.
Right?
You know, you could actually do the sorbetto where you do a lion's mane infused vodka.
That's
tincture.
The next thing I have on here.
Oh, wow. I am that good.
You're good. I was going to say foraged ingredients that you could add, like berries, which we know wild berries have a lot of nutrients, a lot of phytochemicals, and then also like wild herb or mushroom extracts to get that little bit of alcohol like extract in there.
Yeah, I mean, that would be nice because if you're not going to eat all of it right away, it won't crystallize.
Right.
And you still get all of those different benefits. That would be really good.
Exactly.
Wow, you're smart.
So moving on though, how does the process of ice cream making work? We kind of alluded to it earlier a little bit. But basically, before you do anything, an ice cream maker these days will have, most of the ones I've seen, they will have a bowl that is very similar to that sorbettiere I was talking about earlier. It's double-walled, and on the inside, it's got like a freezer liquid in there. So you got to put that bowl into the freezer, and it freezes that liquid and makes the bowl super, super cold. That usually takes 24 hours for a good freeze. And then while that's freezing, a little bit before you take out your bowl from the freezer, you prepare your ice cream mixture by combining all the ingredients we talked about earlier and like really whisking them well, mixing them super well, and then chilling it in the fridge. We've done usually like an hour of chilling it, but some people said even 4 hours. Like I think the more your mixture is chilled, the easier it's going to turn into ice cream. And then you set up your ice cream maker. Turn it on, and once it's running, you slowly pour in that ice cream mixture and let that churn for like 15 to 20 minutes with our ice cream makers that we've tried now. And then the ice cream will be soft served, and you can eat it like that right away, which we have done. It's delicious.
Oh, yeah.
Fresh is usually great. But it's more like, what do you call those soft ice creams?
Soft serve.
So, there's another word I feel like I'm missing out on. I'm blanking on it.
Anyway, no
you can also freeze it to make it more, make it a harder ice cream.
Less of a mushy ice cream.
Yeah.
Is that what you're thinking?
Less of a mushy ice cream. So that's basically it. So an ice cream maker is super, super easy. And we've tried two different ones. Both are from a Cuisinart and they work very similar. And I want to talk about them real quick because on Instagram, Hiking Hippie Heathen asked me to give an honest update about the KitchenAid ice cream maker attachment.
Yeah.
That was the first one we had. Now this, I was super excited about it.
We were really excited.
Mostly because it was on sale and I'd ordered it and I thought it would take up less space because we already have a KitchenAid. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Just like another KitchenAid bowl. We don't need a big bulky ice cream maker.
Mm-hmm.
And, super, super happy about it, ordering it.
Mm-hmm.
It got here. I tried it out. Turned into an absolute disaster.
Yep.
Now, I did watch videos. I did think, I think I followed the instructions, but it still didn't really, it didn't turn out the way I wanted. Mostly because of how that attachment is set up. There's like this piece in there that doesn't fit well. It's not a very secure setup because that one piece once the ice cream gets harder, can pop out, and it's called the drive attachment, I think. And that will just absolutely, if one, it will stop everything from churning. And as soon as you stop churning, even for like, it took like a second, it stopped churning because that whole thing like popped open, the piece popped out, and that whole ice cream in there just froze to the walls of that bowl. And from there on, the like main mixing thing in the bowl that mixes the ice cream, it just wouldn't move anymore. And then, yeah, my ice cream was basically, I had a thick layer of ice cream frozen to the outside of the bowl, but the inside, the ice cream mixture that was in the inside of the bowl was not frozen at all.
Yeah.
And the thing wouldn't turn anymore. So I basically had, yeah, I had wasted, I thought, all that ice cream, that cream and all that, you know, all those good ingredients, because the way it's just set up, it just didn't work out well. Mm-hmm. And then what I started to do is I was freaking out. I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to waste any of this. I need to get this ice cream off the walls of the bowl. And I used a metal spoon and I started scraping it off.
Yeah.
And that night we ate a little bit.
Super sad about that.
That night I looked it up because I'm like, you know what? I want to see if this happened to some other people. And I looked it up, and yes, it had happened to a lot of other people. And then I started reading into it, and people are like, yeah, well, I now have giant chips of the wall of the bowl missing and scratches. And I'm like, immediately, oh my God, because I thought it was like stainless steel or something, because usually the KitchenAid bowl is stainless steel. And I looked, and nope, it's kind of like a Teflon coating. It's
filled with microplastics
and probably other toxins. And that all leached into the ice cream. And that was that.
Yeah.
I was done with that bowl.
Super unfortunate.
I'm like, I'm not going to keep making ice cream out of that. And I just wasted money on this. Now,
Learned.
we learned. I thought there was user error, but I then went on to buy the other ice cream maker from Cuisinart, which is like its standalone unit. And it's a very similar setup, but it worked perfectly. So this one is called... That ice cream maker I'll blend it into, but that one is called the Automatic Ice Cream Frozen Yogurt and Sorbet Maker, and it's their entry model, pretty budget. I think it's $70. I got it on sale for like $58. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I followed the exact same procedure there, and it worked splendid.
Yeah.
And the ice creams we've made with that so far have been awesome.
Yeah, it's nice because you can just plug it in and let it go.
Yep.
You don't have to sit and babysit it.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that for kind of process. Hopefully I explained that well. I'm not a fan of the KitchenAid ice cream maker attachment. Sorry, but just had a really bad experience with it. Yeah. Some other people might like it. Not for me.
Yeah.
The one we have now, though, awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, the big question here is, do you need an ice cream maker, or can you also make this, make ice cream without an ice cream maker? Now, there are different methods for doing this, and I tried the jar shaker method.
Basically. You know, you're going back to early 2000s.
This is a workout.
Yeah.
You can do it. All you basically do, same thing, is you combine all of your ingredients, whisk them really well, and then you, instead of whisking, you shake. You put it all in a glass jar. And you just shake, 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 flip it around, you know, like you're making a cocktail. Maybe you're juggling.
Practice your bartending skills.
Yeah, you can 100%. Juggle with your jar and avocados or whatnot. But I had to shake that thing for like 5 minutes, and I would say I got pretty good muscles.
Yeah, you got jacked. I had to shake.
I was going to say I thought I had muscles already, but that hurt my muscles.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. it definitely wasn't fun. And then after you shake it for that long, you freeze it. And it came out, it tasted great, but it came out very crystallized.
Yep, super more like, icy.
More like some that sorbetto you were talking about earlier. So I'm thinking, if you don't mind that texture, totally fine. It tasted great. Mm-hmm. But it just doesn't give you that like custard ice cream, creamy, rich ice cream texture that you want and that all of us really love.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe with what you were saying earlier, is you add a little alcohol to that, a little vodka, yep. and maybe that keeps it from crystallizing.
Yeah, definitely.
So can it be made without a ice cream maker? Yes. But I think the ice cream maker is definitely superior to the other method. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe there's a method I haven't tried yet, but I would just, you know, just get an ice cream maker. It's so worth it. If you want to make ice cream like once a week, every day, you know,
every
go
day.
Full on out.
Ice cream a day keeps the doctor away. Everyone says that.
Yeah.
That's a known fact.
That I'm sorry. I want to put a correction in there. Nutrient dense ice cream a day
okay.
keeps the doctor away.
All right. That's fair
enough. Not that ice cream with
in
the
general.
Label that I was reading earlier.
Yeah.
It had like 50 million ingredients.
That might keep the doctor, you know, on standby.
Yeah. I think it would.
You need to have a really good call number.
And a toilet.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. Well, Lindy, we went way over half an hour again. I'm going to say this every live podcast.
Maybe we should just tell people it's going to be 40 minutes.
Yeah. No.
Yeah,
I'm
going
to try to get it to 30 minutes. But we'll see. Also, a good conversation like ours here shouldn't be stopped or like, yeah. you know.
I would agree.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to leave you guys with this. Like the fun part about all this is one, you can make it nutrient dense. You don't have to feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be super creative with it, right? You have like really endless opportunities in terms of what you're adding while still keeping it semi-simple. Like you don't have to add all these, you know, xanthan gum and all these industrial additives.
To keep them from melting.
Yeah, but
you
can add chocolate chunks. You can add fruit.
You can heat up chocolate, just baker's chocolate, with a little bit of milk and put it over the top of the ice cream and make yourself like a hot fudge sundae.
Yeah. And, well, or you can do the Parmesan ice cream that you were talking about. That was the hit in like Italy in the 1800s or 1600s or whenever it was.
Or cucumber.
Yeah, or cucumber. Or, you know, do what I was saying and add like the mushroom powders and whatnot to make it mm-hmm. even more nutrient dense.
Yep.
So have fun with it and don't look at ice cream like the devil, because if you do make it yourself, you can actually turn it into a really nutrient dense treat
mm-hmm.
and you really don't have to feel bad about eating that in my humble opinion.
It's a good additive to your diet.
Yep.
Instead of a restriction.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's like a super fun thing to make for your friends.
Yeah.
Like ice cream parties are back.
I'm so
summer
down
ice cream
for an ice
parties
party.
Are back.
That back sounds really
menu,
fun.
Right?
Yeah.
So yeah. That's
well,
it.
Cool.
All right. Great. We're gonna leave everyone with that. Don't forget to absolutely harvest that follow button.
Wow, that was good.
You think so?
That's
I've been trying to come up with something to like say.
That was really good.
I don't know. Maybe we'll keep that.
Yep, I liked it.
So harvest that follow button on the audio podcast platforms, YouTube, X, wherever you're listening. We are doing this right now as a live podcast on X, and for now, it will keep staying a live podcast on X. So if you want to listen to this live, check it out there. And don't forget, Montana Block is sponsoring the podcast. So with the code YEAROFPLENTY, you can get 15% off your entire shop. Super high-end wooden cutting boards, butcher blocks, magnetic knife holders, all made with American-sourced materials. I forgot to say that at the beginning.
Mm.
Everything from the glue to the wood is American-sourced, handcrafted, small family doing it together with some awesome employees here in Billings, Montana. Definitely support them. And then if you use that code, part of the sale will kick back to the podcast and you're supporting your favorite food podcast with it. So it's a win-win-win for everyone, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a big win.
It is a big win.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Until next time, let's keep exploring real food together. Bye-bye.
Bye.